From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The surprise announcement by President Trump that he intends to pull all U.S. troops out of Syria was followed by his musings about doing the same, perhaps, in Afghanistan. For more on that, we spoke with Professor Tony Montero via Skype from Philadelphia Friday. President Trump has decided that he's pulling out of Syria, and he's making noise that he's pulling out of Afghanistan. It's like poking the Democrats in the eye to say these things. All of a sudden, there's a mad dog on their team. Mattis resigned in principle over this with a two-page letter that details at least the fact that there's severe policy disagreements between himself and the president in the context of all the stuff we read. You know, we can fathom what those conflicts are about. And Trump is making, a sharp turn towards the policies that he promised when he was running, more or less. And that we've been saying since the media and everybody started piling on Trump that this was really the big sin that he had committed that made him, persona non grata among the elite, which was turning his back on the neocon project and looking for detente with Russia and China.
Yeah. Well, I guess we could begin with acknowledging that this is perhaps the greatest political crisis in the history of the United States. Mm-hmm. And that includes the one that led to the Civil War. And the reason I say that is because in actuality, the deep state, with all that that means and the institutions and interests that define it, is attacking the president of the United States.
Yep.
And if you read or listen to the media this morning, it's almost an open discussion of coup d'etat. I mean, they've almost moved beyond impeachment to now talking about a coup d'etat.
Yep.
And what is it about? It's about what we have been talking about for almost 3 years,
yep.
Imperial retreat.
Right.
And and I guess the last straw was his saying that the troops in Syria and now Afghanistan should be withdrawn. And as the president in a country that has over the last 50 years given the president almost unquestioned authority in foreign and military policy, he can do that without going to the Senate. And so he's talking about a withdrawal from Syria and Afghanistan.
Right.
Now, this withdrawal from Syria of what is, in effect, an expeditionary force is not a minor thing, because those forces were there as a statement to Russia, Turkey, and Iran that no matter what was decided in terms of defending the sovereignty of Syria, that the United States would remain and have a military force there, which would in effect be saying that Syria cannot be sovereign without our approval.
Right.
And now they're being withdrawn. Now, this has a lot of meaning. That's why they keep talking about the Kurds, the Syrian Kurds. Well, the fact is that the Syrian Kurds were not really fighting so-called ISIS. The Syrian Kurds were being trained as a strike force to overthrow the Turkish government.
Right.
And this would be a kind of a replay of the coup attempt in 2016. And that's why Erdogan and the Turkish government is so intent upon defeating this Kurdish army on its borders.
Right.
It is not to establish a Kurdistan in Syria as such, but to overthrow the Erdogan government or to establish a so-called liberated Kurdish zone in that part of Turkey,
right,
that borders Syria. The other thing about this is that the force that has been shepherding Syria towards peace and the reconstitution of its nation and the government and state of Syria has been this alliance of Turkey, Russia, and Iran.
Right.
And I would say, finally, the withdrawal from Syria is conceding, first of all, that the government of Syria, the Assad government, is the legitimate government of the country, that its allies, especially Russia, but also Iran, are allies of a legitimate government. And Syria has the right to ask for help, assistance, even military assistance from its allies. It is a recognition of that. The other thing is that the negotiations in with the Taliban and others over what will be the outcome in Afghanistan, that is, how the U.S. will withdraw, what will be the process of withdrawal, and what will be the process of the establishment of a sovereign Afghan government. These talks are going forward. Trump's announcement that half of the expeditionary force is going to be withdrawn is an indication that those talks have been productive thus far and are going forward. And the Trump, and I don't, you say the Trump administration, whatever the Trump administration is, and a lot of times it looks like Trump alone, has decided that after 17, going on 18 years of war in Afghanistan, that it's time to get out.
Yeah, I mean, you could say even after 42 years, going back to 1977 when you had Brzezinski and his tank over there egging on the very first fighters against the Soviet Union and the legitimate Afghan government at that time. But certainly since October of 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, yesterday, I'm talking Thursday, the 20th of December, at the UN Security Council, Staffan de Mistura, who is the special envoy to Syria from the UN, made a report about a meeting he had just had with the foreign ministers of Russia, Iran, and Turkey on the question, with also the Syrian government, on the question of negotiating a new Syrian constitution. And that apparently there's been an accord reached among the parties on this thing. Most particularly, you know, interesting here, of course, is Iran and Turkey being on the same page with the government, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, Russia acting more as a guarantor of whatever the parties decide. Mm-hmm. And it was a very congenial Security Council meeting. The de Mistura's report lasted about 30 minutes. It's his last report. He's given up the office effective January 6th, I think. And he's hoping to have this well underway at that point before he hands over the reins next month. Now, you know, that kind of frames the announcement of President Trump that the U.S. is pulling out. It seems that there has been an agreement reached among all of the parties to the satisfaction of both the local parties and the U.S. government, at least the Trump administration or President Trump. So that is kind of the background to Syria. The reason that he's announcing he won, because that's how they do that. But in fact, he did win. His adversary wasn't ISIS. His adversary was the Pentagon and the CIA.
Absolutely.
And they're much bigger fish, and that's who he beat so far. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's a great way to put it. And in fact, to understand the political crisis domestically, you have to connect it to these geostrategic moves by Trump.
Yep.
This imperial retreat, and how that is reverberating through the institutions of power and the institutions of the military. This is, I don't know, you know, as we've talked before, how does Trump survive this?
I know.
I mean, on the one side, he still has strong backing from the American electorate. It is in the 40 percentage points.
Yep.
And that is not insignificant going forward and given all that has been thrown at him.
Right.
But a president has never been able to survive this in the past, but maybe he will.
Well, he's a different kind of creature. There's a few things. First of all, whatever that number is, you know, again, depending on the poll, we've mentioned this before, it runs from about 38 to 51%, but it's in the 40s most likely. Whatever it is, it hasn't budged downward in the whole time he's been in office, and that in the face of a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week onslaught from the media that has unprecedented in human history, this propaganda effort, really, literally. You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, different times when the media went, you know, bananas on somebody like Gary Hart, or after they staked him out and they started beating on him, or what was his name from Vermont that was the presumptive nominee for a minute in 2004?
Howard Dean.
He ended up, Howard Dean. And, Howard Dean looked like after 2 days of, you know, being abused in the press, like he was going to jump off a bridge or something. And Trump, for him, I see him saying, I got 43% of the American public loves me. I'm going to sell each one of them a T-shirt and make a killing, you know. And that's just the way he sees the world, I guess. But the battle that's been won here, to the extent that, you know, there's any conclusion to any of this yet, is that the battle between he and the deep state over what's going to happen in Syria appears to have been settled in his favor.
Yeah. I think you're right, Don. And what they're doing, who has ever seen anything like this? I mean, they're openly discussing not only impeachment, but the removal from office.
Yep.
And if it can't go through the normal legal channels, they're talking about other ways of removing him.
Again.
There's even some insistence on MSNBC that the military act responsibly and remove him from office in defense of the national interests and the security of the nation. I mean, this is...
Yeah, look at Foreign Affairs today. The top story today, Elliot Abrams, remember the convict from Iran-Contra? He got pardoned by Bush, and then he got hired by Bush Jr. But he authors a piece, Trump versus the Government, Can America Get His Story Straight? And at the very beginning, guess who he invokes? He says, as a parallel, he says, as the diplomat Charles Frankel recalled in his memoir, a White House visitor once presented a proposal to President John F. Kennedy. That's a first-rate idea, Kennedy said. Now we must see whether we can get the government to accept it. Well, we know how that turned out for him.
Yes.
So, and this is suggested by Elliot Abrams, like at the top of Foreign Affairs today. So there's some less cultured, like those that write editorials for the New York Times and short stories for the New York Times Book Review, that we've seen over the months already, where they just talk about out and out shooting them.
Yeah. And this is, we've heard this talk from the time he was elected, from 2016.
Yep.
That's right. And so the question is how the nation will move forward and what will the masses of people do in the presence of these threats to an elected president. I mean, they're actually saying, in the name of democracy, that we're going to overturn the election. And I heard Michael Moore, who was going completely nuts, say that he was not elected by the people. Well, there is such a thing called the Electoral College, and every other president that got the majority of the electoral votes became president. Yeah. But suddenly, because he didn't get the majority of the popular vote, he is not a legitimate president, according to Michael Moore.
Right.
That talk is only talk that only encourages coup d'etat and a shutdown of any capacity of the government to function and for Trump to govern. And they're saying this in the face of the polls that say that the numbers pretty much that elected him are still with him.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and this is something that, you know, I'm looking at. They're trying to farm what used to be, in any event, the presumed mindset of Republican voters, of Trump voters over foreign policy, that they are, you know, right-wing, you know, war-favoring, mm-hmm. you know, troop-supporting, mindless, you know, militarists. And yeah. we saw that that wasn't the case at all, that one of the things that distinguished Trump from the other other Republicans that were running and from the Republican establishment that was really favorably received by the Republicans at the RNC was his call to end the regime change and nation building and war and mm-hmm. all of that stuff and to instead focus on job creation and building the economy. And mm-hmm. because it's clear from the way he was framing NATO, our relations with Japan and South Korea, the whole situation in Korea, that one of the biggest problems that he's had with the entire foreign policy alignment of the United States is that it costs too damn much.
Well, that's the big thing.
This is what he talks about, imperial retreat.
And increasingly ineffective.
It's ineffective and it's burdensome and it's a drain on the economy. Every mm-hmm. economist knows this that speaks honestly about it, unless they're in the employ of one of the corporations that make money on this, you know, military, you know, Northrop mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever. But no one speaks about it publicly. Well, Trump is not only speaking about it, but saying we're going to change policy. Mm-hmm. Again, that was the big thing at the very beginning when he started talking outside the box about NATO, that they went, it was like you poked the whole media in the eye.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, Don, we have just talked about this so much that we're almost blue in the face. And yeah. I guess the both of us have been hoping that somewhere down the line, somebody was listening and that, those who might be listening might be prepared to go out among the people and develop a genuine peace movement that was self-determining and rooted organically among working people and reflected their interests. Peace is pro-people, pro-justice. Right. War is the enemy of the people, the enemy of the poor. And that's what we've been trying to say. You overturn this election, what are you back to? A Hillary Clinton or Hillary Clinton type with the policies of no-fly zone over Syria, pushing harder for military confrontation over Ukraine with Russia? Is that what we want? A no deal towards establishing relations with North Korea that respected the nation's sovereignty? I mean, what do you want? I mean, what should a peace movement want at this time? The American people in large majorities have said that they don't want to study war anymore. I mean, if that's the case, how do we account for this small, narrow, and quite putrid peace movement? You know, I mean, it makes no sense.
We've seen this with respect to Trump all the way through. No matter what he does or happens around him, if he touched buildings and they turned to gold and the gold was distributed among the people, before anyone could say this was a good thing, they'd have to say, you know, I'm no fan of Trump's, but, you know, you have to qualify it. So, which is unusual because, for example, people don't do that with the Clintons, despite the odious things that they've done. But when you see the bill that they put together that was really his initiative, the undoing a lot of the worst offenses of mass incarceration and the sentencing and all of that stuff. Anyone that said anything about it, has that preamble to it, and so I posted something on my Facebook page yesterday, saying in essence, Okay, so Trump pulls out of Syria. Let's say he pulls out of also Afghanistan, like he's threatening, makes a peace treaty in Korea, makes peace with Russia and China, brings home the troops from all around the world and closes the bases around the world.
Mm-hmm.
How many? And then the deep state moves against him. How many of you people, people that 5,000 whatever friends that I got, how many of you people would stand up to defend him in that circumstance?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
And you know what? So far, nobody said me.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the American people, a lot of them in the face of this, there's a lot of fear. People are afraid. The other thing is that people are ill-informed. And I guess the third thing is there is no leadership on questions of peace and social and economic justice. In some ways, it looks like this crisis is long-term, and we might enter a period of long-term political crisis and back and forth and unresolved problems of political and foreign policy. And then the hammer drops, an economic recession,
right?
Which could be a game changer. Who knows?
Right, and you know, there's that's multi-tiered also, because you have what people refer to as recession, depression. Mm-hmm. They make reference to the markets, particularly to the stock markets. What's happening, there's some fundamental things that are happening with the economy that are sort of not really measured there yet. They're bringing back jobs, manufacturing jobs, and just the whole attempt to reposition the U.S. economy against some of the other larger economies globally, and the U.S. workers against other workers that have been, weaponized against the U.S. workers. Those things might bring benefits to workers here economically while the stock market is dipping. And so technically we might be in a recession while people's real incomes are climbing. I mean, there's some contradictions that are possible in the middle of all of the moving parts that are in motion right now. So I don't know, but you're right. Look, tomorrow, today the market dumps out and we end up in a crisis like we were in 2008. Who knows where that goes? First of all, Trump may not survive that day, because that might be the day they march out of Langley and the Pentagon and shoot him someplace, figuring they got cover to do it. So who knows? But, there are a lot of other variables, too. But to me, it seems that as we see one and another piece, even if it's a simple outlying piece of the architecture of hegemony being dismantled or turned back or, folded up and put in a drawer or something, we ought to be doing everything possible to, A, hand over political rewards as an example to anybody else who's inclined to do that, by the way. Like, you know what? When you do this, you get this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And also, of course, to more or less encourage further behavior like that in the administration, which is the thing I think in front of us right now. If he's willing to alienate everybody over these policies, why isn't the anti-war movement willing to stand up and say that's the right thing to do? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Well, I think the answer to that question. Don, we're at a stage of rebuilding people's movements and rebuilding a genuine left, an anti-war and social justice left, and overcoming all of the problems of sectarianism that is the left. We're at a new stage in history, I think, and how we resolve these contradictions are yet to be seen.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a rough ride for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, for all we know, these contradictions may well end up resolving us.
Right, true that. And,
I hope
and
not,
from
but,
our standpoint, yeah. we want to be able to resolve them
correct.
In a way that benefits humanity.
Yeah, I'm on that side, yes.
Yes.
Agreed. You know, look at some of the things that, you know, where people actually do some serious analysis of this stuff. And one of the things that I saw was at the Moon Over Alabama website, where they're exploring what, you know, what some of the geopolitical, you know, contextual things are to a decision by Trump to withdraw these 2,000 troops from Syria. Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the most important things for them, I mean, you know, I'm not under, in any event, no one should be under the illusion that Trump or anyone else around him intends to end U.S. imperialism, whether they're hostile to it. What they're trying to do is figure out a way to make it maintainable.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we got to look at, okay, so does that work on our side or, you know, or against our side? And of course, if it means less war and, you know, a smaller footprint on the necks of people abroad by our mm-hmm. military, it's a good thing. So
that's right.
So here, one of the things is that by maintaining the strategy, if you want to call it that, that was followed by the Obama administration and then continued by, you know, Mattis and others into this administration,
mm-hmm.
Turkey is going with Russia. I mean, Turkey's, you know, NATO position, the theory of this piece that I'm looking at Moon Over Alabama is that what Trump sees is that trying to run the whole world by ourselves is too expensive and counterproductive. So let some other guys run that half of the world and we'll run our half and then we can just sit down and haggle over stuff when it comes up between us. And in that context, Turkey ought to be choosing up sides with Russia and China instead of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have the United States doing what it's doing in Syria and playing around with Kurds and everything else that, you know, operate against Turkey's national interest. You've had the EU dissing Turkey for, you know, forever. I mean, Turkey's been trying to get into the EU for a very long time, and the Europeans just keep dissing them. And, you know, the U.S. hasn't been treating Turkey very well. You mentioned the other coup attempt, and there's this whole, you know, Kurdish thing that's going on. And so it may well be that by backing out and letting Turkey and Iran and Russia settle this problem, that Trump is saying, okay, let's get down to our fundamental geopolitical interests and not let this little sideshow start a fight that we really don't need.
Well, and Trump also realizes the magnitude of the federal debt of the United States.
Yeah, true that.
Which is larger than the GDP.
Yeah,
and
right.
I mean, it doesn't take rocket science, but it did take a political outsider to acknowledge that these debts, which are in large measure due to past wars and the cost in terms of veterans' health and all of that type of thing, and preparation for future wars.
Yeah.
I mean, the largest area of discretionary funding in the federal budget is the military.
Yep.
And so he understands that when he comes out and says that the military budget is crazy and we're going to reduce it and I want to meet in a summit with Putin and Xi Jinping to work out some of these military and political strategic questions, I mean, I think you got to take it seriously.
Yep.
I mean, he doesn't have to say it. He could just go along to get along.
And I think in that context also, and we're kind of at the end here, but I think just to conclude this, in that same context, it's noteworthy that the first audit of the Pentagon that comes back saying, you know what, they've got trillions of dollars that no one knows where it went. And it's completely unauditable. The entire thing is so opaque that it's impossible to figure out what goes on there. And there's a fundamental change that has to happen. I don't think it's a coincidence that we're hearing this and seeing this audit and the report of the audit, more importantly, happen under Trump's watch. So we'll pick up there next week, Tony, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you very much, Don.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now.
For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.